Well, this is confusing. Just take this Wagner bit as an illustration of the danger of losing hope and getting sidetracked on things that aren't important when you've discovered an important psychological truth. I think that's all you really need at that point.
Should we mention the Grail as the spiritual essence of Christianity that needs to be carried forward?
Now, if you want to take it a step, some folks aren't even with us at all. So I'm just trying to get the very basic point across. That's fine. I mean, this is difficult. Don't feel bad. This is very difficult stuff. And the illusions are vast. But you don't need to know the illusions to get the basic point. Now, to Carol's point, I brought in another understanding. Because in the original Grail story from the 12th century, written in three different versions by three different authors, but there are common themes, but there are some differences. We don't have to worry about that. The basic story is the blood was caught from Jesus' side at the crucifixion. It was transported to Europe and was housed by the Grail King. It was anywhere from France to England, depending on who's telling the story. The king who, at whose court the Grail is held, is crippled. He has been injured in a battle with a heathen adversary and stabbed by the spear. The only thing that makes him happy is fishing. He's often called the Fisher King. So he's miserable. He's got this wound that won't heal. And he fishes daily. Parsifal, the hero, then enters the story. And he has to go through a whole pile of adventures to get ready to go to the Grail Castle. When he goes to the Grail Castle, his job is to say, whom does the Grail serve? In other words, who is benefiting from the blood of Christ today? By asking that question, the wounded king is healed. He stands up. And then in a short time, he dies. And another king takes his place. That's the story. What von Franz and Emma Jung made of it is the Grail vessel represents the continuing effectiveness of Christianity today. It is the effect of Christ on our lives today. Well, in the 12th century. But if you think about it, it's not working. It's not healing that king. So the effect of Christianity today is nil. When Parsifal asks, who does the Grail serve, and the king is healed, he doesn't say it's from a story, but their interpretation of it is, that shows that what Christianity is keeping alive is something that should die. And Parsifal allows that king who would represent Christian values to die because he no longer can deal with life. So that the Grail story is showing the impending death of Christianity. And Parsifal is the one who makes that possible. So when Jung says in the story, I'm Parsifal, I add my possible meaning. That it shows that it's a repeat of what we've already seen. He realizes Thomas Aquinas has only very limited value. He's not going to throw Christianity out, but he's not just going to fall back into the Christian solution. He's going to address the problems in Christianity that make it ineffective today. Is that any better? Make sense? Does that make sense, Marla?
I guess part of it is the importance is that you've asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's this good for?
Yeah. Which means that what we should be saying is, what's this good for?
Yeah.
Remember, Jung at World War I realized Christianity didn't stop World War I or World War II. What's it good for? The answer is, not much. And that is a statement that is so offensive, but nonetheless true.
But then the idea of the blood talks about an essence that has continued on throughout from history, pre-Christian even,
yeah,
that has to be carried forward.
Right.
And that's the whole, in my mind, the whole value of the idea of the Grail.
Right.
That there's that
right
essence.
Right.
And that's something that Jung wants to carry forward.
Absolutely.
Too, if I understand
right
it correctly.
Absolutely, yes. So he's not throwing out the essence of Christ. He's finding a way for that truth to be reframed and relived so it is effective.
And it's not even the essence of Christ. It's something that existed before Christ.
Or the essence of the sacred, you might say.
Or, yeah, symbolized by blood. By blood.
Mm-hmm. We'll see the new God.
Yeah.
So Jung is, in the story, is a Parzival and Princess. He
yeah
wounds it and heals it by causing it to be healed again.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you see, what we've just said is we're not saying anything new, but we're reflecting on, look at the implications of what Jung has accomplished and how easy it would be to forget that. That's all we've done up to now. But it's almost maybe not worth spending time on, but I think we can learn two things: how easy it is to forget what the unconscious has told us, and that this work fits in a larger historical framework. And this will become what Jung later calls the transformation of the God image. The sick king would represent the ineffectiveness of our contemporary understanding of God. Those of you who are doing Burkhäuser, you know, we've seen how the new images of God are appearing. But we get it in a very crude form here, but you can see later how Jung then took all this confusing stuff and framed it into a coherent message. Mm-hmm. But this is where it started. Mm-hmm. We can barely, I spent about 5 hours preparing this damn stuff. Just to understand it. And he figured it out. I'm just trying to understand what he figured out. And the fact that he didn't run off half-cocked or act like a savior, I mean, any one of a variety of errors could have taken hold at this point, forgotten about it, become a Jim Jones or I'm saving the world, you know? No. Or a Nietzsche. Yeah.
That Nietzsche going crazy
mm-hmm
helped Dr.
Moon's yeah faith. Right. Okay, is that any better?
Yeah.
Let's see, where do we... Where do we stop? I've lost track of my...
Top of three.
Yes, that looks familiar. Well, it's now two paragraphs. I didn't say it would be easy.
Well, he threw that whole Grail thing in there, gave it
yeah
two paragraphs, and then goes right on.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you see how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now I think we can... Let me see. Do I want to say anything else? No. We can go through the rest of this page pretty easy, because the rest of this page is just reflecting, how do you stay true to what I've just seen? Look at the second line in that little section marked 2. You know, doubt. I'm just hitting some of the main points. What is doubt? Is it going to waylay me? The next paragraph, truth. What's truth? See, he's just reflecting on the veracity of his experience. He talks again at the bottom of that column about the other in us. Well, we've already done that. That's the lowest person. But he's just now regurgitating and reflecting on and trying to solidify his confidence in his experience. That's how I read that. Look over the next column, the danger of being mocked, the third paragraph. Good and bad luck in the next paragraph. And then we come to the last paragraph. So all of that in that piece is just a reflection on, can I stay true? Now it gets complicated again. I'll read you the last paragraph, and unfortunately we'll probably have to slow down. When the God enters my life, see who I am, I return to my poverty for the sake of the God. Now we've had that before. How his bringing God's will to life takes a burden off of God. Does that all sound familiar? That's nothing new. I accept the burden of poverty and bear all my ugliness and ridiculousness and also everything reprehensible in me. I thus relieve the God of all the confusion and absurdity that would befall him if I did not accept it. More of the same. By living out what the self asks him to do, frees up the self to have its dignity. And if the self is allowed its dignity, our life is enhanced. Or do you see that? Not very often, thank goodness, but I've seen some people with terrific talent ignore it and die. With this, I prepare the way for God's doing. This we've all done before. What should happen? Has the darkest abyss been emptied and exhausted? Now, that's where I think we start another thread, or what stands and waits down there impending and red hot. So he's saying, is this the end of the story? Will I have another night sea journey like I just had? And I don't think exactly that's going to be the case. What we're going to see, and when I get confused, I look ahead to see, where are we going? We are going to start another process. It won't be as intense as the previous one, but what it's going to be, it will be differentiating wisdom. We're going to see about 5 or 6 different images of wisdom. So that he's working now on solidifying and evolving what he's accomplished. That's how I understand. No, it's not over, Jung, but it will be a different style of journey now. You have achieved much of your insight. Now you will be fine-tuning it, honing it, letting it mature.
And this is what we see in the work, too, right? You get to the point, you have a dream, and then that's the beginning of a new process that you must live into.
Mm-hmm.
But that process never stops.
Mm-hmm.
That's constant the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. And that's what he's coming to terms with.
Okay. But he didn't know that at this time.
No.
And would that be why he says, even though you said you don't see it so much in practice, why he says that you deal with the shadow first, that would be the conflict,
yeah.
And then you are differentiating wisdom, that would be Sophia.
Yeah, yeah. Or in in a man, it'd be the masculine self-image. So we're going to be seeing a whole pile of different aspects of the self being entertained, listened to, responded to, and the implications of them put into life. We'll be going there in about 3 or 4 pages, but I think this is where we're headed. I think if you know where you're going, it's easier to follow all the pieces along the way. Well, it's not going to get any easier with that. And we have to read the footnote, I'm afraid.
Yeah, the footnote pretty much tells everything.
Yes. Atma Victu. Now, I don't know where that name comes from. Whether that's, is that Latin or Sanskrit? Or
like parts, two Latin words stuck together.
That's this guy.
Does Atman mean breath or something?
Yeah, I mean, but Atman as breath, isn't that Sanskrit?
Is there a Latin word Atma too?
Not that I know of. Anyway, it doesn't matter, I don't think, really. But he says it means the breath of life. So everyone see where I am? Footnote 222, bottom of 303. And that footnote is an explanation of this picture. So this figure is called Atma Victu. We'll come back and look at all these. So you're sick in the stomach. And then, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, Juvenis Adiutor.
Juvenis
Adiutor. And when you're not my computer, froze up again. I don't know what it is.
This reminds me of a lot of Chinese images of the dragon always chasing the pearl, and he never really can catch it. It's always spinning out of his reach. But that's the sun up there, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to have to read it.
But this dragon gets to eat the sun.
Mm-hmm. Eat the sun and the youth.
I'll go through the text and I'll come back to the pictures. So we've got Atma Victu, and then we have the youthful supporter, and then we have Telesphorus. They're the three figures we're going to be working with for a while. And then the spiritus malus in hominis qui bustum, the evil spirit in some men. We're going to get that thing. I don't know why that's crashing. I thought I'd solved it.
Always the one that started with the T.
Telesphorus. T-E-L-E-S-P-H-O-R-U-S. I'll read you what he says, and then I'll try to make sense of it. The dragon wants to eat the sun, The dragon is Atma Victu. And the youth beseeches him not to. But he eats it nevertheless. So this is the dragon, Atma Victu, breath of life. But he eats it nevertheless. Atma Victu, I think maybe someone's like a skip. First appears in the black book. I think I should read it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a paraphrase of what's written in the black book. The serpent says that Atma Victu was her companion for 1,000 years. He was first an old man, and then he died and became a bear, then he died and became an otter, then he died and became a newt some. It must be a newt. Like a salamander. But then he died again, came into the serpent.
So is this the same serpent that's talking? Who says this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Serpent is Atma Victu. He made a mistake before them and became a man. And while he was still an earth serpent, Jung's soul says that Atma Victu is a kobold, or a kobold type of dwarf. A serpent conjurer, a serpent. Now here's what I think is important. The serpent says that she is the kernel of the self. From the serpent, Atma Victu transformed into Philema. Philema. That's enough of that. No, maybe not. Well, let's just stop there anyway. Philemon, have you all heard of Philemon? He's Jung's wise old man. So I put up over there, this is not terribly important, and I'll try to explain how it might be easier to digest, that we're watching a birth of Philemon from this form. So we're watching the evolution of wisdom. Don't get hung up on linearity. Just think about all the different ways that wisdom is now starting to appear to Jung. As a salamander, as a dragon, as a wise old man, as a snake. They are all different aspects of wisdom. I think if you can work that way, it'll be easier to remember. Just remember, all of these are figures of wisdom and different aspects of wisdom. We can talk about in time what each is an aspect of. What aspect of wisdom each represents. Now, one of the reasons I'm going into this is these were so important that Jung had them sculpted. That sculpture is Atma Victu, and it's in his garden, in his yard, in Zurich. In Kuzno.
Did he sculpt them?
I don't think he sculpted that.
Okay.
He had that one made. So That's one form of wisdom. Another form of wisdom is Kark in this stone, he begins talking about Philemon and Telesphorus. This is Telesphorus.
The central figure.
Central figure. So if we just leave it to say for the moment that what Jung is doing now, he's seeing different images of wisdom. The snake, the salamander, Philemon, and Telesphorus. And he felt these were important enough that he sculpted the first, and he had the first sculpted, and he sculpted the second.
So here, does he give us a hint as to why Atmavictu evolves into Philemon when he says, when he talks about he made a mistake?
Yes.
Before then and became a man?
No, he doesn't. But we can speculate.
Because I suppose if wisdom, if the dark aspect became a man, was that the devil? And that was a mistake? Or from Philemon's point of view?
No. As I, the reason I, again, I put that little chain of development up there. If observe, everyone with me so far? Different aspects of wisdom. He doesn't tell us. This is my supposition. Wisdom is a process which starts with earthly desire. That's why it's a serpent. What we have done up to now, looking at, remember, Salome and Elijah, and the pretty girl and the old man. We talked about how desire and wisdom function. This is a restatement of that process. So the snake and the serpent and the salamander would represent the beginning of a life process, starting with desire on the earth that eventually leads to wisdom. And there are two dangers, as we said. Now, I'm just recapitulating. One danger is out of morality, you don't enter into the experience. The other danger is out of unconsciousness, you stay stuck in the experience. And the art of becoming wise is going into experiences consciously and learning from them. Hopefully through dreams.
Is that why the dragon eats the sun? The sun is consciousness?
Right.
Okay.
The dragon, but see, I think that's the old sun.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It eats the old sun.
Which is wisdom.
Which it has, it, whose wisdom, maybe it was wisdom at one time, but the wisdom of which no longer applies.
So out of morality, one fails to live one's nature.
Yeah.
And then the next one was out of...
Well, out of unconsciousness, you just stay stuck.
Stages.
Or repeating the same situation, sort of a Don Juan. Or
can we say Christiana Morgan?
Christiana Morgan stayed stuck. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You go into the libidinous experience, but you can never extract yourself from it. So the shift from the snake to Philemon is the shift from the experience to the meaning.
So what do you think Atma Victu's mistake was?
Well, they're all necessary steps along the way, and they're only mistakes when they've outlived their time.
We're looking at it from Atma Victu's perspective when we talk about the mistake that he refers to.
Why don't you read it, Carol?
Well, the serpent is Atma Victu. Mm-hmm. He made a mistake before then and became a man while he was still an earth serpent. Could that be a reference to the whole Christian problem? How this dark element, Atma Victu, went wrong in Christianity?
Read it again.
The serpent...
Where are you?
I'm in the footnote, right in the middle of it, 222.
Let's see, 222. Yes, then he died.
The serpent is Atma Victu.
Right.
He made a mistake before then and became a man while he was still an earth serpent.
That he was an old man, then he died and became a bear, then he died and became an otter, then he died and became a newt. Is the old man the mistake? Became a man? First he was an old man?
Yeah, it says the mistake was that he made a mistake before then, became a man. It seems to be indicating that becoming a man at a certain point was a mistake.
Yeah.
Before he was ready.
Maybe before he was ready.
Mm-hmm. His animal nature.
Mm-hmm.
Or even.
But we're looking at it from the perspective of Atma Victu, not a man, not an earthly man.
Well, that would suggest that these impulses have their own rhythm.
That's what I'm indicating.
I think.
And that somehow, that's why I think it might be pointing to the problem of Christianity, that somehow the dark aspect that Atma Victu represents.
That
kind of went
sense.
Wrong there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, what confused me is he says the serpent says that Atma Victu was her companion. So this, and then he mixes up that Atma Victu becomes a serpent.
Yeah.
So I'm confused.
So they're all one, I guess. Huh?
Because he refers to Atma Victu as he, but then here it says she. Mm.
Yeah.
So I'm a little confused.
Well, it's because it's confusing.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I have permission to be confused.
Yeah, and so don't try to make sense of it.
Okay.
Isn't it basically, it's talking about an evolution from lower animals to more differentiated, and then man gets higher somewhere, but maybe it's the wrong time. But it's still an evolution of...
But he's going the other way. He's going from man... to bear, to otter, to newt. That seems like it's devolution.
Then you get back down on that.
Right, instead of an evolution.
Then it comes back up.
And then he comes back up.
Yeah. I think Carol's right. And
I'll explain again.
Well, it's something was made human before its time.
Okay.
You have to descend fully to the depths.
Yeah.
Pure lust.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It just occurred to me that image of Atma Victu looked kind of like the animal in the picture before, with this different layers of caves.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think they're supposed to be the same figure.
Yeah.
Mm. Or the shadow figure.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same exact thing.
Or their cousins.
So the newt in alchemy, that's the salamander in alchemy, mm-hmm. that's always burned, mm-hmm. right? So you have to be burned before you mm-hmm. can become human.
Yeah. Now, why this is so confusing is this is the unconscious. It's not held by linear rules. There is, I think, a certain development there. But don't try to get it too clearly in your mind, because it's not clear. I think it's easier if you let go of the developmental sequence and just see all of these figures are aspects of wisdom. There's an aspect of wisdom that wants you to descend into your animal nature. There's an aspect of wisdom that wants you to rise from the animal nature. There's the aspect of wisdom which is the wisdom itself. It's a process with different stages, and depending on what stage you're in, it's going to look different. I was just talking to a woman recently who said, you know, I have a happy marriage, but I met this guy and I just couldn't keep my hands off him. We had a 6-month affair. And it's over. And I learned so much from him. See, that she's come away better from that experience. And if to have not gone in would have been foolish. To go in was wise. That would be the snake and atmavictu aspect of it. Having come out of it with a realization is the wisdom that she got out of that experience. So at each point, the dream are going to symbolize this process of getting wise in a different variety of images. And she said, I don't ask these nosy questions. I want to say, well, did your husband know? Anyway, she said, well, my husband doesn't know. But he does. Because our relationship is deeper. What a paradox that is. And she said, and we're done. That relationship, it's over. I will never be taken back to that again. So that's the wisdom process. And what we're seeing here is all the different elements that go along with it. Now, she could have not gone in out of morality, or she could have stayed in the sensuality of it for pleasure. But she went in, she had the experience, she left, she drew her conclusion. It was a 6-month affair, she said. Well, everybody okay so far? I thought we spent a little time looking at what Jung sculpted on these stones. Because obviously what we're seeing here are images of the fruit of everything we've done up to now. And I think the editor says Jung carved the very end of that footnote. Carved a dedication to him in Greek, from Heraclitus, from the Mithraic liturgy, and from Homer. So let's look at those. The sculpting is around here, and it says where it says MDR, it's the memory stream reflections of that sheet. Time as a child, playing like a child, playing a board game, the kingdom of the child. This is Telesphorus, who roams through the dark regions of this cosmos and glows like a star out of the depths. He points the way to the gates of the sun and to the land of dreams. That's from Memory, Dreams, Reflections. And indeed, that's what the author is talking about, because the footnote says the first sentence is a fragment from Heraclitus, the second sentence alludes to the Mithraic liturgy, and the last sentence to Homer. So what aspect of wisdom is this? I would say this is very akin to Jung's recognition of the presence of synchronistic phenomena. See, he roams through the dark regions of the cosmos. Now, we don't know what causes synchronicity. Jung just gives it a name and an image. But it shows that through his Nietzsche journey, he's realizing there are forces in life which science has not documented. And he's given them a mythological name.
This website kind of jumped open for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how or why. Anyway, I'll give this to you. But it shows that. And then you go to another page, I think, Jonas Boeing, the link, talking about carving the stone. And he talks about what everything means in there. And I think it's quite worthwhile to go through. It's just, it's beautiful.
What, but, do you have the address of that for us, or are you going to hand it?
Could you send it to each of us?
Pardon me?
Could you send an email to us?
Sure, absolutely.
Why don't
you
do that?
Uh-huh. Okay.
Maybe we could all watch it before next time.
Okay, yeah, well, you have, yeah, because I watched, I kept going back and forth because I wanted to write down what all he said. Because the woman who's being interviewed that leads into this video is, she says this is Jung's individuation process.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really quite beautiful.
It'd probably help us if you could
alert
us to the video. We watch it, and we'll add to what we're saying now from that. Because it is very important.
Yeah.
He wouldn't, you see, of all the images we've done, these are the only two I know he sculpted. So that's why it's so important to spend time on.
What also I'll send is the notes that I took from it. And then if you can enlarge on the notes, please.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
So the other, it's got sculpting on three sides. On the other side, the bottom quote, I'm an orphan alone, nevertheless I'm found everywhere. Well, the orphan is a classic image for the philosopher's stone in alchemy, meaning you no longer depend on other people. I am one but opposed to myself. I am youth and an old man at one and the same time. I have known neither father nor mother because I have had to be fetched out of the deep like a fish or fell like a white stone from heaven in woods and mountains I roam, but I am hidden in the innermost soul of man. I am mortal for everyone, yet I am not touched by the cycle of eons. That would be a classic description of the self as it appears in alchemy. So we're seeing how Jung has developed his idea of the self out of these experiences. Another description of the, which is on another corner of that stone is at the top of the page. Here stands the mean and uncomely stone. It is very cheap in price. The more it is despised by fools, the more loved by the wise. A description of the philosopher's stone. So remember where we are. We're way, way back in early Jung's life, but you can now hopefully begin to see how these chaotic experiences are leading into psychological theory. This is where the self concept starts to be born in Jung. And he goes through a rather detailed course of what led to what. Don't get bogged down in that. Just appreciate the various aspects of the images that come up. I think you'll be all right. But there's a serpent aspect, there's a salamander aspect, there's a unstable aspect, atmadiktu, which changes. There's Philemon. We'll see one or two more coming up next time. There'll be a ka, K-A, soul. And there'll be a ha, soul. At different places, he describes how one gives birth to the other. Don't worry. Just try to get a panorama of wisdom from all the images that appear. And then these images are expressed qualities, which he then included in his theory of the self. So we're seeing those experiences which Jung then summarized eventually into the self.
as if he's paying the mandala of.
That's a good way to look at it. He's got, here's the concept of the self, here's an aspect of it, here's an aspect of it, here's an aspect of it, here's an aspect. Our mind wants to go, yes, but it's not, doesn't make logical sense. No, it doesn't. Because there are different aspects and different qualities of selfhood at different times in our life, different states of levels of consciousness, but they are all qualities which sooner or later we go through if we seek selfhood. How are you feeling? Does it make sense? Because it'll get worse next time. But we've done a lot.
There was a lot to keep related in this.
That's what's hard. And you can get frustrated because it's not always linearly.
No, it's definitely a web of relations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't.
I feel like behind it all, there's a web of related, all relates to itself.
Yeah. Well, we got as far as the bottom of 303. I had you read to... Yeah, we won't get past that. We have two more meetings, I think, before... So.